Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, a special edition of the Terrible Podcast, Pittsburgh Steelers Training Camp 2017. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and I'm joined by my partner in crime on the site, Alex Cazora, who's fresh back from his trip to La Trobe via St. Vincent College to the high school out there on this rainy Friday in La Trobe. Alex, happy Friday first and foremost, and happy football and pads season, almost.
You know, Dave, it was a monsoon today. It rained like crazy. I nearly had to put my floaties on. I'm not a strong swimmer, but a little bit of rain couldn't get me down. First day of practice, first day of camp. I was just thrilled. I know everyone listening is excited. I know you are as well, Dave. It's a great time of year. I can't wait to talk about today.
Like Dick LeBeau used to say, it's a great day to be alive, and I'm glad glad the McLumina looks like it's going to make it hopefully through another training camp there.
Now I got to knock on wood, Dave. Now I got to like do a ritual to not jinx yourself.
I hear you. Well, look, you know, how nice is it that the team has a backup location all set, ready to go, like La Trobe High School? I mean, can you imagine, it could very easily today's practice had been washed out by the weather. But lo and behold, Mike Tomlin spoke about this after practice as well. You know, the unexpected is kind of good for a team to have to go through something unexpected like that. And it looked like they pulled it off without a hitch. That field, talk about that field out there first before we get started. That field looks like it's in great shape out there.
It was, yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I mean, there's three places this team can practice at. St. Vincent, of course. They actually have their gym that they can go to. They did last year. They have La Trobe High School, where Friday Night Lights are at. And today was the third location, Greater La Trobe High School, which is only 5 minutes away from the college.
So you're telling me something new. I thought it was where the Friday Night Lights was at. Mm-mm.
Because that's a grass field, too. This was a turf field, Greater La Trobe High School. And that's where they had practice at. Six yellow buses took the team up.
Okay, so that's turf out there then.
Yeah, this was a turf field because La Trobe High School, where Friday Nights are at, that's grass, so that would have been muddy just like St. Vincent, so that was a no-go. So they have a third option, apparently, Greater La Trobe High School, and kudos to the Steelers staff for organizing that. Either that was a plan or did it on the spot because, you know, things went without a hitch today.
See, I don't read the fine print and all. You know, every time on iTunes, I couldn't tell you. I don't know what that agreement says. Maybe I should go back and read it there. All right, well, that's good news. I'm glad you set me straight on that. Before we get any deeper in this, real quick, I want to get your thoughts on what happened at reporting day on Thursday. The big news, the bullet points David Todd and I went over this morning on the Friday morning podcast. Also, we're not going to rehash a lot of that, but they're easy bullet points to remember. You know, the Martavis Bryant thing, which look, I don't think anybody still has a firm grasp of what's going on there. To me, it sounds like something happened on Bryant's end that maybe he didn't get set up, you know, clinical resource or something like that, possibly even in La Trobe. But you know, let's cut to the chase. I think the biggest story of the day was the fact that Alejandro Villanueva signed a new 4-year contract, 4 years, $24 million. I think I know your answer to this, but what's your thoughts on that deal?
No, it's fantastic for both sides. And, you know, I'm right with David Todd. I got about through half of the podcast you guys have done today. And I'm sure you had the same thought, Dave. In fact, I know that you did because you nailed the numbers once again. But it's funny. Everyone outside of Pittsburgh assumes the deal is going to be one way, but anyone who follows the team super closely knows the Steelers always win out in terms of the market value of these deals, whether that's Ramon Foster or William Gay, even someone smaller like Landry Jones. These guys always come in below what the national perception is, and while many on the outside assume that Villanueva was going to get you know, 8 to 10 million per year. He comes in at what, 6 million instead. So it's a great deal for both sides. Really gets paid in the future, and in years 3 and 4, where, you know, before the new deal got done, the Steelers would not have had Villanueva under control. Now you look at year 3 and 4, provided Villanueva continues to play well, they'll have him for way below market value. So win-win-win. Couldn't happen to a better guy. I'm excited. I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, and I guess the other kind of minor storyline that's kind of gotten pushed under the rug a little bit, David Todd and I hit briefly on it this morning, Damian Stafford not reporting, and then Mike Tomlin said after Friday's practice that sounds like he's considering retirement. Boy, that's kind of a huge blow. I had Stafford, I think, on my 53-man roster prediction there, and then, you know, several of us were excited about him, not only as a potential backup safety, but as a special teams contributor, and then boom, it looks like his career in Pittsburgh is over before it even got started.
Yeah, bummer. Just, you know, you wanted to give that safety spot in terms of the depth a little bit of excitement. But now that Stafford's out of the picture, you kind of have the four guys set. That does help these cornerbacks, though, Brian Allen, Golson, because now, you know, it's almost positive the team's going to keep six corners and four safeties. So that's going to help them out. But yeah, I was a little bummed. But if that's what Stafford wants to do, hey, man, more power to you.
All right. Now, everybody's tuning in, obviously, to hear what happened at the high school today. First day of training camp. A little bit of housekeeping first. No injuries as far as I could tell today outside of Juju Smith-Schuster having to leave the field for a little bit with, I think Mike Tomlin called it an ankle. Will Graves of the Associated Press just so happened to videotape the play that happened on. You can see Juju kind of come up hobbling at the end of that play. Immediately you think, oh no, Liz Frank or mm-hmm. you know, something like that. But he evidently was able to get back on the field. I think you were the first one to even report that he was back on the field for the special teams period that followed the seven shots period. And, he might be a little bit sore. We'll have to see what happens on Saturday if he's able to go, if that ankle swells up on him or anything. But I think first and foremost, the fact that the Steelers got out of practice number one without serious injuries, that's big enough news to start with right there.
Yeah. Real quick, just two other quick notes. James Harrison, healthy, but not in team sessions today. He was in sweats, did stuff on the side. One guy who did not practice for unknown reasons, I haven't heard Tomlin's presser, so I don't know if he addressed it. LaVon Hooks, number 65, backup nose tackle, did not do any workouts today. So I don't know if we know what's going on there, but there's something up with LaVon Hooks.
Yeah, and that's a guy I threw on the practice squad in my latest prediction there as one of the 10 men. Just needed a 10th man there, and I threw his name in there. But never a good sign when you're that far down the depth chart and you weren't placed on PUP to start. Then all of a sudden, first practice, you're not out there working. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on all participation moving forward. And you do a great job of letting us know every day of who works and who doesn't work. There's no sense getting in. Seeing as how this team's still not in pads, I don't think that starts until what, Sunday. No need to talk about who looked good or who looked bad or that kind of thing. But I think the big thing we need to accomplish over the next couple of days is look at the pecking orders. Albeit, you know, it's not something that you need to read a lot into, but at least it gives us a starting point here where we can go in through the rest of training camp and say, okay, well, this is getting switched around here. Why don't we start with the offensive line? I think it's obvious what it was, the starting five that's been set in stone, so no sense rehashing that. Tell us about groups 2 and 3 as far as left to right.
Sure, yeah, we'll take you through it. And Dave, you're exactly right. You said the key phrase. This is a starting point. Teams are fluid. Guys are going to change. Guys are going to rotate. But you don't know if things change unless you know how they start. So we like to take note of where guys are lining up, where they're running. And so when things do change, and of course they will, we can report it and we can give you the timeline through. To the offensive line, I'll read it through the second and third team. Second team offensive line working left to right. Terrell Hawkins, Mike Matthews, B.J. Finney, Matt Filer, and Chris Hubbard at right tackle. And then the third team from left to right again, Jake Rogers, Ethan Cooper, Kyle Friend, Kevon Milton, and Brian Mahalik. So they're your two teams.
Any surprises in your mind with those groups?
Nothing major. I guess if I had to choose one, I thought that Ethan Cooper might work second team left guard over Mike Matthews. You know, Cooper, a big guy, you know, the high priority undrafted free agent the team brought in. But I think Matthews has a little more experience, at least by a year. So that could be a reason why. So maybe I thought Filer was going to work at right tackle and Hubbard at right guard, but it flipped the other way around. So no huge surprises there, I guess.
Yeah, I have a feeling it won't take Ethan Cooper, hopefully not too terribly long to work his way up into that second group. So it's good. Like we said, it's good to have a starting point here. I guess you're going to tell me Gerald Hawkins didn't work anywhere but tackle.
Yeah, just left tackle today. Give it till next week, the week after. Then they'll start moving those guys around to swing spots. I know you're pushing for it. We'll see.
I don't know if you got to the point in the podcast with David Todd and I today. We hit on that, and I think David sort of brought kind of the same thing up with Hawkins. You'd be interested to see if he has position flexibility. And I stopped him mid sentence. I said, Alex Tesoro will take issue with you even bringing that up. So.
Look, you crazy kids. I got the Duke boys out here going crazy on me.
We covered this several times, during the time we were together during the offseason there. It's not something that I'm counting on happening, but it would be nice to know if he – and look, I mean, you got Villanueva up under contract now. Gilbert's not going anywhere. We'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, one would think Hubbard's going to make this team too, as well. You know, it'd be nice to know maybe if you had some position flexibility with Hawkins, but we'll see. We'll have plenty of time to worry that about that one and the other. What do we have? 14, 15 practices remaining here. The wide receiver, I wrote this morning about the wide receiver lines obviously being shorter with Sammy Coates on PUP, Kanan Severin on PUP, Martavis Bryant on the commissioner's whatever list, procedural list, if you will. A little bit shorter lines, but there was one that seemed to be beneficiary of that today, and really it kind of worked right on into the article I wrote this morning.
Yeah, I assume you're talking about Justin Hunter. Are we on the same page on that one, Dave?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he got the start at the Z receiver spot opposite of Antonio Brown. That was consistent throughout all of first team work today. You know, there's flip-flopping, mixing and matching elsewhere with other guys, but Hunter was on the outside, made a couple catches. Again, individuals really tough to read into. There was one or two mistakes mixed in there as well, but certainly for whatever time that Coates and Bryant's going to be out, that could be a week, could be a little bit longer, Hunter's got the chance to take advantage of it. And, you know, we know that Hunter's playing with the best quarterback he's ever played with. He'll get to play against some younger, more inexperienced corners in both practice and in preseason. So he should look good when you're 6'4", 200-plus pounds, whatever he is, and can run, 4'4". You better look good in shorts and shells. And I thought he had a nice day today.
And I don't take any of this as a slap on the back of the head to Darius Hayward Bay. But let's face it, everybody know who Darius Hayward Bay is. Right. They really don't, they want to see probably as much of Justin Hunter as they possibly can. And probably not surprising that he's getting a lot of early work like that.
And to see him catch passes from Ben, because you don't want to stick Hunter with Landry Jones right away, then you never learn what he's like with a really, top-tier quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger. So you know Hayward Bay, how he works with Jones and Ben. So let's get Hunter in there with, number seven and just see how he does and see him versus, Zach Mettenberg as the guy he's played for in the past. I think playing with Ben is obviously going to be a better gauge of his skill set.
A bit surprised that a lot on Juju's plate, moving around so early.
Yeah, again, obviously the injury kind of limited him, so, snaps were a little scarce on his side, but I did see him on the outside. I saw him in the slot a bit as well. So, Todd Haley's mantra, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, is, usually we work these guys at one spot to get them good at one spot, but again, I said it before, I'll say it again, second-round picks don't sit, and so you look for these guys to get on the field however you can, and you work them however you have to. So if he can play both spots, that's all the better, and that's going to be a real good sign for things to come.
DeMarcus Ayers, where'd you – were he lining up inside and outside, or –
I think it was just inside. They had, you know, there's such a rotation, like I said earlier, with Eli getting inside work and Juju and DeMarcus Ayers as well. So I think it was slot only. Ayers was funny today. He wore Chris Boswell's jersey for some reason. I don't know if there's a joke there. So he's wearing number 9. So it kept throwing me off and I kept missing him. But I believe Ayers got most, if not all, of his work in the slot today. We also know he can play on the outside. He did some of that last year.
And with Le'Veon Bell not in camp, probably not overly surprising with how the pecking order went today.
Yep, it's veteran, deferring to the veterans. Fitzgerald Toussaint opened up as the number one running back. Now Davis behind him. James Conner, third team, and I'm not even sure what was behind that. Everyone else got like a carry or two, but that's the pecking order. Don't freak out. Conner's a rookie. He'll have the chance to work his way up.
All right, tight ends.
Not a whole lot to really talk about there today. I didn't get a great sense of pecking order. I mean, we kind of know what it is right now. J.C. James is his number one. David Johnson, kind of the number two. Xavier Grimble, the number three. But, the skill set will be based off receiving, blocking, Johnson blocking, Grimble receiving. And then Orndorff and Fazon Odom got mixed in as well, even with the ones occasionally. So when you go 12, 13 personnel, extra guys get to come into the game. I don't have a great report really on pecking order or performance. Orndorff had a nice kind of double catch today in 7 shots, so that was nice for him.
You want to go through the complete first and second string defense lineups?
The entire defense, all 11?
Yeah. Why don't we kind of run through those kind of quick? Because I'm going to have some individual questions about some guys.
Sure. I think I might have to pull up second team at some point. But first team was almost as expected. I mean, you guys know a defensive line. Tuitt, Hargrave, Hayward, outside linebacker, Dupree, left outside linebacker, T.J. Watt, right outside. No James Harrison in team drills. That could certainly be one reason why. Watt was first team. Inside linebacker, Shazier and Vince Williams. Cornerback, Burns, Cockrell. Safeties, Mitchell and Sean Davis. Second team, the defensive line was, I think, Tyson Alulu at lefty end. Johnny Maxey, nose tackle. L.T. Walton, right defensive end. Outside linebacker, again, there's a rotation there, but I think it was really Arthur Motes at left outside, Anthony Ciccolo right outside. Inside backers were Tyler Medakevich at the buck and LJ Fort at the Mac. Outside corners, you could really say Golson at left corner on the outside, Sensabaugh right corner on the outside, Mike Hilton in the slot. Safeties were then, of course, Robert Golden and Jordan Dangerfield.
And Gay, of course, first team slot.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, Gay, first team slot. And actually, I think Golson, what did I say? I think I had it reversed. Golson was left corner in Sensabaugh. I can't remember. But they were on the outside is the point you have to know.
All right. I wanted to hit real quickly on LJ Fort. I assume Steven Johnson was third team inside.
Yeah, I really didn't even see Steven Johnson today. I certainly could have missed him. That's kind of at the top of my list for tomorrow because I saw Keith Kelsey and Matt Galambo, the two undrafted guys, running together at some point. So I don't know really for sure where Steven Johnson fit into everything. So let me get back to you tomorrow on that. I don't want to say anything incorrect. I just honestly just didn't see him today.
My thing about Fort, with LJ Fort, is he closer to the bubble than – I mean, is he inside the bubble? Do you think? You think he's out? I mean, we've seen so little of him. He's just a special teams guy. I mean, we've seen him do some good things in limited playing time in coverage. I think last year in one game, and then of course he blew up a running back. What was it in the opener? I think against the Redskins. So there wasn't a lot to look at him on film. But I mean, he's a guy that's been around the league for a while, and make no mistake about it. I think Steven Johnson is by far the better special teams player of the two. But, LJ Fort, I mean, running second team, right out of the chute there. Should we read much into that yet?
Well, some of it could be a Mac and Buck kind of thing. Fort, to his credit, is a really athletic linebacker. You see him come out of his cuts and, flip his hips and turn and rally. I mean, he's pretty explosive, so he fits the Mac linebacker role, I think, pretty well behind Shazier, and that's why, at least week one against Washington, once Shazier got dinged up, Fort came in as the Mac linebacker. He's more athletic than Steven Johnson, and to be honest, I think they're kind of comparable special team players. I think maybe Johnson is a tick better, but I think Fort's a pretty good special teamer of his own and a versatile guy. He's played on the outside. He's played inside. Has done everything on special teams. So I think Johnson was running first team punt coverage today and Fort second team. So read into that what you will. But I think Fort's literally right on the bubble. It could go either way, but he's a guy you shouldn't forget about because I think most Steeler fans kind of forget who L.J. Fort is.
Yeah, and, you know, it's easy to do. And, look, I mean, we don't know how many inside – you know, odds are probably good that they're going to keep at least 10 linebackers in total. Now, is that going to be six outside guys and four inside guys or five and five? You know, I in my latest prediction, I had five outside and five inside. You know, people are going to think I'm just trying to run – Arthur Motes out of town, but you know they very well could keep six out, you know, six outside guys and keep Keon Adams as a six and just not dress him for a little while, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But in doing sure. So, you would think they would only keep four inside guys, but you know you need somebody to play on special teams, and obviously Dupree's not going to do that now. James Harrison's not going to do that now. Really, God bless Arthur Motes. I'd rather not see him on special teams either. So you start. And of course, Vince Williams and Ryan Shazier, as good a special teams player as Vince Williams is, I think I'm done seeing him play on special teams and then mm-hmm. find an alternative to him, you know, as well. So somebody's got to play special teams, you know?
Right. Right.
So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I know you're not going to like hearing this. And again, it's day one. We're not going to read into things too much, but first team punt coverage unit. Arthur Motes was the left tackle. Steven Johnson, the left guard. Holbo, of course, the long snapper. Then Medikevich and Chicolo. And so that was over LJ Fort. LJ Fort not on that first team unit, that particular one at least. So it's just something to go off of from there.
Yeah, I'm gonna ignore all that on day
one. Conveniently ignore it.
Yeah, if it don't fit my narrative, I'm ignoring it.
That's a true Steelers fan. That's a Steelers merit badge
exactly.
for you.
Exactly. Hey, I'm yinzering it up today. Okay. All right. You read the report by Mike Pursuit on Steelers.com today, and of course you read some of your tweets from practice. It sounds like day one of 2017 Steelers training camp was a whole hell of a lot better for Artie Burns than it was in 2016.
It was, and here's two things to get me excited about Artie Burns, Dave. One, he's playing both left and right corner. I think they want him to be flexible so he can either shadow number one receivers or so Ross Cockrell could, depending on the matchup, how they feel and how players progress. So you're not so locked in the left corner, right corner, as things kind of went last year where Cockrell was mostly left corner and Burns mostly right corner. So that's exciting. And then two, Burns did not leave Antonio Brown's side today. He's shadowing him. He's following him across on any motions, left, right side. Didn't matter where he'd be lined up. Burns is on top of him, often in press man coverage. And so you get that experience of going against AB repeatedly and just go against the best receiver in the league every single rep. It gives you that mentality of I can never take a rep off because if I do, this guy, AB, of course, is going to burn me. And so I love that mentality. It gets instilled right away this year. And to Burns' credit, you know, he got beat twice early in practice, one on a deep ball down the right sideline, another one, a comeback on the left sideline. Ben took a third shot at him down the right sideline, and Burns was there, had good coverage, and the pass fell incomplete. So you're building mental toughness, and you're going against the best receiver in the league that's going to hone your physical skills. So those are reasons to get excited about Artie Burns, and he finished the day on a high note.
All right, good. I mean, it's got to be a noticeable difference with him out there as opposed, I don't know how much you remember of last year at this time.
Well, I remember in camp last year, he barely played in camp last year because of that, what was it, a groin injury or a knee injury or something? He missed, what, 2.5 weeks. So just getting him out there in camp is nice. And, yeah, he looks fast. I mean, you know, playing a little more man coverage, you could tell. So, you know, it's all positive on that front.
All right. Anything, you know, Sean, those second-year players, Sean Davis, Javon, look, they don't have pads on. They really can't hit and all like that. And thus, really, safeties, you know, just as long as they're in the right spots and all. I mean, anything else stick out to you kind of defensively, whether it be scheme or you know, the way people were moving?
Yeah, I did see some more man coverage. Not a lot of blitzing, but that might be natural for how early we are. Hopefully, you know, we'll see some of that. Usually they have a couple practices where they'll have a session or two or just literally straight 10 or 15 fire zone blitzes. At least they did that last year. Yeah, Jacob Hageman nearly picked off Josh Dobbs. Dobbs had a very rookie mistake throwing across his body on play action. Davis was pretty aggressive. The one thing I do want to talk about, though, defensively, and I don't mean to harp on this because I don't want to sound like I'm a guy that just goes after the same player time and time again. But Dave, our friend, Big Dan McCullers, appears to be running third team. Johnny Maxey, again, second team nose tackle. That is a bad sign for Shade Tree.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I put him on my 53-man roster just because when you think of Johnny Maxey, do you think of a guy that you're going to bring in into the center, you know, as a nose mm-hmm. tackle? You know, you mm-hmm. think of him more of a prototypical, you know, 3-4 defensive end, or maybe playing the 3-tech or something like that in a nickel or something like that. You don't really think of him being a 0 or a 1.
Mm-hmm. Right. I remember the issue with Maxey last year was how skinny his lower half was, you know, small school kid from Mars Hill. So, I mean, he probably added some weight, but maybe not your most ideal nose tackle. And again, McCullers was playing alongside of Nelson Adams and Roy Filon. Those are two guys who are not making the 53, so they're not a good name to be associated with.
Yeah, you know, obviously, trying to light a fire still underneath Big Dan and having mm-hmm. to do so entering. This is his fourth training camp, right? I mean, mm-hmm. If the light ain't come on right now, you need to check the bulb.
And by check the bulb, you might mean replace the bulb, and that might be Johnny Maxey, the new bulb that's coming in. We'll see what happens. Like, what is day one? I don't want to get too far ahead of myself.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, like we said, we needed a starting point, and we have one. Okay, anything else pecking order or anything else sticked out to you on either side of football that surprised you?
I think that was the big stuff. Hilton, again, second team slot. Again, Senquez Golson working outside and in, second team outside corner opposite Cody Sensabaugh. Then he moved third team slot, so he's getting experience at both spots, which makes sense for a guy going into his third year. He'll have the leg up over a guy like Cam Sutton, who played back a bit and just on the outside. You're not going to put too much on Sutton's plate right away. You can do so more with a guy like Senquez Golson. Individual, it's tough to really learn a lot from. Golson did have one nice key read today. It was a play action pass by Josh Dobbs into the right flat intended for DeMarcus Ayers. Golson read it, took it away, forced Dobbs to throw the football into the sideline. So one minor play to note, but you know, I guess for Golson, being able to play multiple spots and play with speed and you know, good read and recognition of your keys, that's a good jumping off point for a guy like him who certainly needs it.
All right, give us some highlights from 7 shots.
Oh, let me pull up my list here. I believe the offense won 4-3. I don't know if anyone else had the numbers on it. I kind of missed the last play. Our fellow writer David or Chea was there and told me that it was a touchdown, so I took his word for it. Let's see. The first play, Vince Williams broke up the pass. So I'm gonna pat myself on the back there, not hurt myself, but pat myself on the back because Vince Williams, I think the guy can cover, and people don't talk about it too often. So the first play was an incompletion win for the defense. The second one was for Justin Hunter for a touchdown over Ross Cockrell. It was a little drag route. The third play was an incompletion to Juju. This is the one where he got dinged, hurt, whatever you want to call it.
Was that a drop? It's hard to tell in the video because it's on the other side of the field. Was that a drop?
It was in the right corner, and so you had some players over there that kind of muddied things up. I couldn't really tell what happened. Sean Davis was in the area. I think maybe Juju just ran out of room and then he kind of hurt himself. So he didn't catch the ball. I know that much. I couldn't tell really what happened though. 100% sure.
All right. Anything else stick out?
I'll just run through the rest real quick. An RPO, it's a swing seam RPO, which is Todd Haley's, one of his favorite combinations, that went to Eli Rogers. I believe Rogers was short on that one, got shoved out. Landry Jones hit DeMarcus Ayers on a drag for a touchdown. Then Jones hit Orndorff for a touchdown. That's the one that was kind of high. Orndorff tipped it up, and then it came back down to him for a score. And then I believe Jones hit Kobe Hamilton for a touchdown on the last one. So 7 shots, red zone offense. You know, that's such a big focal point for the Steelers this year. Something that they rep every single, you know, start of every single camp practice. And today the offense won by the narrowest of margins.
All right, anything else from the session that we haven't talked about that you'd like to cover today?
Just new long snapper, of course, Colin Holba, Danny Smith, really working closely with him. A lot of coaching points there. And just, I don't want to sound too sentimental about it, Dave, but it's nice to see when you see James Harrison, who's not doing any work, come over, help those guys out to be blockers. You have Chris Boswell as one of the quote-unquote rushers to help with that situation. Kim Hayward even came over late, and Danny Smith right by them, and seemed pretty pleased with the work of Holba and Cameron Kennedy, the other long snapper, by session's end. So I just like to see that come together. I love seeing Danny Smith, you know, me hearing him, loudest guy in the stadium. And then Mike Matthews as well did a little long snapping very early on, so maybe he's going to be the the pinch hitter in a preseason game if they ever need someone.
I think it's way too early to start doing winners and losers when they're still in you know, shorts and helmets. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll save that for a couple more practice from now. But yeah. Tell me three plays that stuck out the most to you today.
I think I'll give you two, and they're kind of similar. Ben hitting AB down the right sideline for a long completion. It was right in the bucket for a 40-some-odd gain over Artie Burns early in practice, but then Burns responding later by defending another go ball the other way a session or two later. So you'd like to see, obviously, Ben and AB haven't missed a step at all, and then you see AB or Burns recover against AB mentally and go ahead and make a play. So those are two plays that kind of stick out in mind. A third one, I could go a couple different directions. There was one carry, and I know you can't hit it running backs and the intensity isn't there, but James Conner got a handoff up the middle, made a little cut to the left, and then came upfield right away with burst and speed, and I kind of like his feet, and I like his shiftiness coming out of pit. So maybe just one little tiny snippet that kind of made me get a little excited about James Conner.
Do you kind of wish they would hold all their practices out there? That way they're not on multiple fields. Did you have a good vantage point, did you think today?
It was perfect, yeah. When you're all on one field, there's really nowhere to go. So you can see everyone clearly. Tim Rice, our photographer for Steelers Depot, got some amazing photos. Be sure to thank him on Twitter. He'll be up here at camp for the next couple of days. So, yeah, you know, whether that's Latrobe or St. Vincent, you know what? I'm just a happy camper. I'm happy to have football back in my life.
I am too. And look, we're right at about the 30-minute mark. This might be the longest, special edition training camp podcast we do all year. We'll try to keep the, if I can stop yapping sometimes and stop getting Alex off track, maybe we can start getting these things wrapped up in about 22 minutes or so. But once again, we want to thank our main training camp sponsor again, Touring Plans. Is this year three? With them sponsoring us, Alex?
Mm-hmm. Yep, 3 years. Thank you to Touring Plans, sponsoring some of the meals this year. If you're planning a Disney trip, have something coming up there, please hit them up again. Touringplans.com is the place to go to check those guys out.
Yeah, we really do appreciate their support. Mm-hmm. It helps with you know, Alex's meals and some gas. And also, several of you have already donated to the fund, you know, the annual training camp fund, and we certainly do appreciate
definitely.
You know, that as well. It's not required. We're going to do this anyway. You know, if you can't find that where that GoFundMe page is, just hit Alex up on Twitter and he'll point you in the right direction. Or if you just want to go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button up right navigational bar, and then put in there for Alex for training camp. We'll make sure they get separated into right piles there as well too. And Alex, you know, listen, I had David Todd back. It was good to have David Todd back on the Terrible mm-hmm. podcast today. And you know, I just want to personally thank you. You know, you're a great co-host for me all off season. It's kind of become the norm that once the season ends, we get into draft talk, and you know, give David Todd some time off during the off season, and you know, no slight, you know, against you whatsoever. You know, people have come to love you and know what to expect from you on the podcast, and it really is a big, big help to me, because Lord knows I couldn't do these shows alone. So, you know, I just want to personally thank you. I don't thank you. Folks might not realize this, but I can be sometimes difficult to work with.
What?
That might be a surprise to some, but I really do appreciate that. And obviously, there'll be times forthcoming, you know, during the regular season where David Todd will need a day or something off, and I know you'll be right there to sit in. So I appreciate that as well. And if you're not already doing so, make sure you are following Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazora, Timothy Rice and David Orchetta, your two other ones that have been out there early on, will probably be out there a few more days with Alex as well too. So look for these nightly wrap ups on SteelersDepot.com that Alex does when he gets back from Latrobe, and then of course we'll be doing these. You know, we should be able to almost nearly every night do the, unless they run late, do these nightly podcast recaps as well. Thanks again, Alex, mm-hmm. and folks. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast.